On the surface, Dan Shaun's new novel, Await Your Reply, is about Miles Cheshire, who's been on a 10-year quest to find his twin brother Hayden, Ryan Schuyler, a college dropout who goes to live with a father he never knew, and Lucy Lattimore, who drives away after high school graduation with her boyfriend, her history teacher. These three narratives add up to one burning question. Who are you? Dan Shaun joins us from WCPN in Cleveland. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
The title, Await Your Reply, is taken from those spam letters we've all received about money being held for us in a foreign country, and if we just do this, then we'll do that. Was it inspired, this novel, by the issue of identity theft?
Well, I think it actually started with the images that are prominent in the first three chapters. I was interested in the kind of post-apocalyptic quality of certain landscapes that I was thinking about a lot. In fact, the first thing that I started with was this hotel on the edge of a dried-up lake in Nebraska. And I started writing about it because the lake where I grew up, Lake McConaughey in Nebraska, was, in fact, suffering from a drought, and a lot of it had dried up. The places where we used to swim and boat and ski were actually just dry sand. And the identity theft stuff came in a little bit later as I was trying to put together how all of these different pieces fit together. And of course, getting spam constantly, as we all do, I was really aware of that as a cultural phenomenon.
Mm. The idea of that dried up lake bed, there's a ghost town that was flooded when there was a lake there, at least as I read it in the book.
And right, that's correct. And in fact, that's a fairly common phenomenon. Most states have drowned towns, as they're called, during the period when we were crazy about building reservoirs. A lot of these little valley villages, people got moved out and the water came in and they left the houses, so, or at least the foundations.
Yeah, so it's the idea of that something was there and now it's been replaced and it's lost its identity, but it's more like it's like a ghost.
It's one of the things that happens in America a lot. It's a really interesting part of both the American dream and American culture that we reinvent ourselves and that towns spring up suddenly and may vanish just as suddenly. I mean, particularly growing up in Nebraska, there isn't a lot of history that goes back beyond the settlers. A lot of the towns are from the turn of the 20th century, and some of them lasted and some of them didn't.
In Nebraska, where that ghost lake is, Lucy and her history professor are hiding out at an abandoned motel, and there's this gothic house behind them, and it's straight out of Psycho. I mean, this is deliberately, right?
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, pretty deliberately. Meanwhile, while Lucy's staying at this abandoned motel, she finds a cache of old videos, and one of the ones that she watches is Rebecca. There's a little bit of a Hitchcock obsession that's running through the whole book.
Yeah.
Not only Rebecca, but I guess there's a Vertigo scene that comes kind of a little bit later where George transforms Lucy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he keeps asking her, if you could be anybody, who would you be? Who would you be? Who would you want to be? The idea of reinvention, people who reinvent their lives, and then you get into the questions of identity. Your first novel, You Remind Me of Me, involved twins, and as does this one.
Right. Actually, they weren't twins. They were just brothers.
They were just brothers.
I think they were 3 years apart.
Ah. Well, what fascinates you about twins? How does this? I mean, we have Miles looking for his twin brother Hayden, but there's more to it than just twins.
Right. I mean, I think the thing that particularly fascinates me is that the sense of here's somebody who has the exact same genetic makeup as me. We were in the womb together, and there's this romantic sense for me, since I wasn't a twin, that you've got this person who you're connected to in this incredibly deep and complicated way. We're so involved in the idea of the singularity of the self. But at the same time, it seems like the self is much looser than it used to be. There's a lot more ways that you can slip out of yourself and into somebody else if you care to. In fact, I guess most of us do in one way or another. We all have our different avatars that we're working with in Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I guess not everybody does that, right?
Well, I think it's become more prevalent because we can.
Right.
We can.
And it's fun. I mean, it's fun to be someone else for a little while.
Yeah, but if you're causing someone else harm because of it, that's a right. whole different story. That's the moral of your tale in many ways.
Right. And in fact, I mean, one of the other inspirations for the computer aspect of the novel was the behavior of various trolls on different websites. And by trolls, I mean people who deliberately go onto websites to disrupt and to cause harm, or at least to cause an emotional uproar amongst the more staid participants. And people have done some remarkably cruel and awful things over the last few years because we trust in some ways that a person who appears in a chat room or whatever is more or less who they say they are.
Yeah. The scary thing to me about the book is that people are so gullible. We so often believe what people tell us about themselves, even if their stories are fabricated.
Right. And yet it's necessary to live in the world to have some kind of trust that people are genuine, right? I mean, it would be a horrible way to live if you couldn't trust anyone. And I guess that's the dichotomy that I'm trying to think about in the book, is how much trust is useful and how much trust is necessary to live in the world.
Actually, the reader, me and anyone
yes.
else who does, didn't make the connections between the three narratives, the three stories, until about two-thirds of the way through the book. And it's rather jaw-dropping when you start to make those connections, and even more jaw-dropping as you get toward the end. Did you know when you were writing the book how it was going to end?
No, I did not. Not during the first draft. And in fact, I was really surprised by a lot of the twists and turns that came up as I was writing. There are people in the book that are real and people who are not. And as I was writing about them, I assumed that they were all real, up until I started to realize that there were deceptions going on. Mm-hmm. It's fun for me to write at least the first draft with a kind of openness about the plot, because it helps, I think, to be able to discover things along with the characters. It helps, I think, to develop the characters, and it also helps to keep sort of my options open in terms of where things are going to go. I mean, I know a lot of writers will work with an outline, and the problem for me with an outline is that it creates this kind of predeterminism that I have a hard time working with.
Mm. Who are you?
I'm a pretty normal guy. I've found my life really in a way that has made me extraordinarily happy. I started out as a kid in a sort of small poor community in Nebraska, and I ended up going to college, which was unlike the rest of my family, and I ended up as a college professor at Oberlin College, married and with two kids. It may be that part of the reason that this novel spoke to me so much is that, I can see all the places along the way, along that journey, where I might have taken a different path and become a radically different person.
Why should I believe anything you're saying?
You shouldn't.
Dan Shaun's new novel is called Await Your Reply. It's published by Random House, and he joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Dan, thanks a lot.
You're so welcome.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.